On the afternoon of Saturday, May the 23rd, 1992, an Italian magistrate called Giovanni Falcone was driving in a three-car motorcade from the airport to the Sicilian city of Palermo. Normally, a helicopter would have surveyed the route in advance, but because of recent cutbacks, this didn't take place. As a result, no one saw a team dressed as construction workers placing a huge bundle of explosives under a metal drainpipe along the route. "All hell seemed to open up before us," said a witness later, of the massive explosion that ripped up the road. I knew of this story before meeting here today, but what I knew less of was the life of the man, Giovanni Falcone, who, along with his wife and three bodyguards, was killed that day. My guest, who's chosen Falcone for Great Lives, is the writer Misha Glenny, probably best known to BBC listeners for his work reporting from the Balkans. His most recent engagement has been a book called McMafia, subtitled A Journey Through the Criminal Underworld. Misha, you've never written specifically about Falcone himself, so tell us why you've decided to nominate him as your great life.
Well, in the 1980s, I was living in Vienna, and in Vienna, I followed a television series which had been made in Italy called La Piovra, The Octopus, which was an absolutely fantastic drama set around the mafia, and in particular one investigative judge trying to uncover what was going on. This series had an uncanny ability to mirror things that were about to happen. And when Falcone was killed in 1992, I realized that his had been a sort of real-life version of the fictional version that we saw in The Octopus. And from then on, I started looking ever closer as a sort of hobby at what had gone on in Sicily and in Rome, in southern Italy, during the 1980s. And I came to the conclusion that this was one of the most cankered countries in Europe, and he was the man who exposed these dreadful people and paid for it with his life.
Is it possible in just two or three sentences to give a rapid thumbnail sketch of what Falcone did?
Well, he started working on the mafia in the 1970s, when it was a boom time for the mafia because they were making huge sums of money out of the burgeoning heroin trade in particular. He developed techniques of incredibly rigorous investigation, which led to something called the Maxi Trial in the late 1980s, in which for the first time major mafia figures were put on trial in Palermo, in the Sicilian capital. For Italy itself, this was beginning to be a sort of life-changing experience. All sorts of questions were raised by Falcone and his work in terms of how the Italian state functions and what the aspirations of the mafia really were.
Before I introduce our other guest, I think we should hear a clip of Falcone himself talking.
È necessario andare alla radice del fenomeno, colpendo sistematicamente e permanentemente tutto. Le strutture portanti dell'organizzazione mafiosa in quanto tali, indipendentemente dagli altri delitti commessi. In altri termini, la mafia è un fenomeno troppo serio perché lo si possa affrontare in maniera poco seria.
Yes, maybe I can offer a translation. Falcone said it is necessary to go to the root of the mafia phenomenon and strike a blow to systematically and permanently dismantle all its organizational structures. In other words, the mafia is a serious phenomenon and should be confronted in a serious way.
Diego Gambetta is a fellow of Nuffield College and author of a major work on the Sicilian mafia. His next publication is about how criminals communicate. Diego, tell us about Falcone and what he represents in and for Italy. I was amazed to find on YouTube that there are literally hundreds of Italian tributes to his life and his work.
Well, Giovanni Falcone is the best known of a larger group of Sicilian judges and law enforcers who took on the mafia. Several of them have been assassinated because of that, not just Falcone. Now, my impression is that the impact he had is due to the display of integrity, professionalism and endurance to a degree which is rare anywhere. And it's particularly rare in Italy, where people, if anything, especially in Sicily, would be used to the opposite: corruption, incompetence and fickleness. Right? So this had a tremendous impact. Falcone looked like a rock among pebbles.
We can't emphasise too much the incredible courage. It's going to be a running theme, I think, through our discussions. But he must have known all along that the likely end of his life would be violently by the mafia, and yet he chose to go on.
Indeed, early on in his research, we saw the outbreak of the so-called Second Mafia War in the early 1980s, in which one family from Corleone was trying to take over the more established families in Palermo, but at the same time, they announced effectively an assault on anybody in the Italian state who were getting in their way. And so you had this period, which is known by the title in Italian, which is literally translated as excellent cadavers, eminent bodies.
Kind of jihad.
A sort of jihad against anyone in the Italian state who made it plain that they were actually going to try and do something about the mafia. Now, up until that point, the mafia had always been very careful about taking out anyone from the Italian state. Now, Falcone's colleagues and the people he was working with were being murdered in broad daylight, left, right and centre. He knew he was going to die at the hands of the mafia at some point, I think.
He did know, but at the same time he tried very hard not to and took all sorts of precautions to avoid that, to the point of leading a secluded life from 1983. In fact, his sister Maria says that he and his second wife, Francesca Morvillo, who died with him, chose not to have children because Giovanni once said, "We don't want to leave orphans."
Let's start from the beginning of his life, which was where, Diego, and in what circumstances?
Well, he was born in Palermo in 1939 to a middle-class family. And he was the youngest and only male son in the family. And as he himself said, he was the prediletto, the favorite of his parents. He had two older sisters. And his father was director of a public chemical lab, and his mother was a housewife that he himself described as forceful and rather authoritarian. And contrary to the Italian mother stereotype, she was rather restrained in demonstrating affection. And interestingly, his was a very patriotic family, and I think that shaped his character. Two of his parents' close relatives died young fighting in the First World War, and he said they were obsessively remembered as heroes by his family. So he said, "We felt affectionate admiration for these dead relatives, and their lives was considered an example. They served the fatherland."
He was, in other words, as well as being a hero and a crusading anti-mafia character, he was a great Italian patriot.
Yes, one thing I discovered doing some research for the program is he was once asked, "What makes you do what you are doing?" He was asked in an interview, and he said, "In what I believe, you mean?" Well, it may seem silly, but I believe in something Kennedy said. "We have to do our duty to the end, whatever the sacrifice we have to endure, cost what it may. In this lies the essence of human dignity." I mean, this may seem rather pompous, but he was a very unassuming man, and he had funny sides and light sides, so one shouldn't take this. But in the context of Italian public service, this is a striking contrast.
I think that's the most important thing, a sense of the need to articulate how important public service is in a country where, frankly, public service is looked at with considerable cynicism.
How did he become a judge? Tell us about his early career.
First, he had a spell as a naval officer cadet, and his father wanted him to study law. He studied law, went to university, graduated in time with full distinction, and then he started the judge career in Lentini, then in Trapani, and then in Palermo.
These are all places in Sicily, and Trapani in particular is very well known as a stronghold.
Yes, western Sicily is the core of the problem.
Misha, we're talking about the mafia as though it was just an obvious, easily delineated fact, like Al-Qaeda or the Conservative Party or something like that. But what was the mafia at this point when he was developing his skills as a young magistrate?
Well, the mafia had managed to consolidate its influence after the Second World War, in part because they bought into the strategy adopted by the government in Rome of keeping the communists as far away from power as possible. And so they played a role in the Cold War. But also what they did traditionally was exploit the weakness of Italian institutions inside Sicily to basically build up what some people have called a state within a state. And so they were defining what was legal and what was illegal. And as far as they were concerned, what was legal was anything that made them money. They started getting involved in cigarette smuggling, and then came the heroin. And so by the time the 1970s and 80s came along, they were a very, very powerful, wealthy organization, which was linked right up to the top of the Italian government, in some cases notoriously so.
It's odd this, Misha, because in the early 70s, I was a desk officer in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office in the department dealing with Italy. So it was my job to receive and, if necessary, onwardly transmit all the dispatches that were coming back from our embassy in Rome. And there was a hell of a lot about the PCI, the Italian Communist Party, and there was a hell of a lot about the Christian Democrats. I don't remember anything coming back from our embassy about the mafia or connections with the mafia. Did they not know about it?
Well, this was partly because particularly people in the Democratic Christians were consciously broadcasting the idea that the mafia didn't exist, that it was actually a fiction dreamed up by Italy's enemies to discredit the country. And I think the real reason for this is that these guys at the top of government, and particularly in the Christian Democrats, were very deeply involved with some of the key mafia figures. And so you
make it seem as if the part of the political system was made up of criminal entities. The political system may have had very specific interests to deal with the mafia, and the two entities are very distinct. They have different interests.
So
there was an interest in acquiring votes, in acquiring favors, in distributing funds, in maintaining law and order, which the mafia was reasonably good at doing in some respects.
So a little bit for instance, the relationship between governments in the 70s in Britain and the trade union movement. It's not a matter of one infiltrating the other, but two separate bases of power.
The mafia is fairly indifferent about who is in power. It doesn't have political preferences. The main goal is to be able to go about their business without ending up in jail. That was commandment number one.
Misha, Falcone didn't start out as a hammer of the mafia. And was there any big incident, big case that drew him in?
I think very influential for him was when he took operational charge of what's called the Spatola Inzerillo Gambino case. And this was the big heroin smuggling operation in the late 70s and early 80s. And what he did was to look at all the relationships, all the family relationships, which connected these various smugglers and drug traffickers. But he also started doing things like looking at bank accounts in a very forensic fashion. This was relatively new as a policing technique, and which became his hallmark as an investigative magistrate.
He also obtained a success with that because he managed to gain conviction of the Spatola Inzerillo gang, which was a first, because traditionally the outcome of mafia trials was ending in acquittal for insufficient evidence.
I guess it was in this Gambino case that he first realized that if he went further down this line, death was always going to be a possibility.
I think so. I think he was probably aware of that beforehand, but I think the most telling thing was the fact that he didn't have children with his second wife.
You're listening to The Great Life of Giovanni Falcone, chosen by Misha Glenny. And with me also, we have Diego Gambetta of Nuffield College, Oxford. Before we move on, I'd just like to play this piece of archive, the Newsnight reporter David Sells, reporting from Sicily on the opening of the Maxi trial in February 1986.
This trial will be taking place against all the odds. The mafia has shed blood freely to try to stop it coming about, striking at representatives of the Italian state, assassinating judges, police detectives, and a carabinieri general with ever greater abandon. Four determined individuals have refused to be intimidated, a quartet of investigating magistrates here in Palermo, who have prepared and documented this unprecedented case, their lives permanently at risk. This trial will be, as much as anything, a testimony to their dedication.
Misha, tell us about that trial.
Well, the Maxi trial came out again of an initiative that Falcone was very closely involved with, and this was trying to get hold of mafia people to turn state's evidence and testify against their former comrades. They're known as the pentiti, which we mistranslate as informers, but it's a convenient way of doing it. And the main pentito was a man named Tommaso Buscetta, a killer and very influential member of the old mafia Palermo families that had dominated Cosa Nostra up until the late 70s and early 80s. And he revealed secrets with his testimony that had never before been publicly articulated. And this was really the coup de grace, I think. Falcone said, before Buscetta, we had only a superficial understanding of the mafia phenomenon. With him, we began to see inside it. He confirmed for us numerous ideas about the structure, recruitment techniques, and the functions of Cosa Nostra. But above all, he gave us a broad, wide-ranging global vision of the phenomenon. He gave us an interpretative key, a language, and a code. He was for us like a language professor who allowed us to go among the Turks without having to try to communicate with our hands. That's definitive, I think.
One of the elements that played in the preparation of the Maxi trial was that the mafia war had created an awful lot of people that were in danger of their lives, who had had their dead relatives or friends killed by the Corleonesi faction. So they were quite ready to turn state evidence in exchange for state protection. And this was possible partly thanks to terrorism. It was somewhat of an accident. That is, terrorism had been such a sore in the 1970s that the Italian state had breached a legal taboo. It became possible to negotiate with criminals, terrorists, and then mafiosi who decided to help the state.
That's what governments do, but none ever admit.
And certainly not at the judicial level.
Yeah.
And it was a spectacular event, the Maxi trial. I mean,
led up to it?
This was basically, as Diego was explaining, this was the response to what had been going on in the early 80s, the murderous war, but also the heroin industry that was developing. But because the preparation for the Maxi trial was so thorough, I think the indictment itself was something like 40 volumes. Everybody understood that here, at last, was the recognition in a public forum that there was something very rotten in the state of Denmark, i.e. the mafia. And to see them all, you know, in their cages in this specially built court in a bunker in Palermo was really terribly dramatic for all Italians, I think. I mean, Diego was probably witnessing it.
I attended a few sessions.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Did you meet or see Paolo Borsellino, Falcone's great comrade in arms?
I did, yes. I spoke to him at some length twice. He had an armoured car under his apartment building, and when we sat to speak, he sat in a corner out of the window frame because he was obviously under threat.
Diego, both Falcone and his fellow investigator, Paolo Borsellino, grew up knowing mafia kids. Is that important to the knowledge that was later to develop and acquire?
Well, I know that has been said, but I think it's more part of the mythology. As I was thinking about this, I thought, well, when I was age 6 or 7, I played with people that ended up in the Red Brigades, or I even play with people that now vote for Berlusconi, and that doesn't make them more understandable to me, having played with them as children. So I think that what really made us able to interact with the mafia was their character. Falcone said, I feel deeply that I am a judge, and the mafioso who talks with me, in other words, perceives that. But he also knows that I do not pursue ulterior motives. I do not have a secret agenda. And I never forget that even in the worst murderers, there is always a flicker of humanity. There is another aspect. You were asking before, how can somebody endure this risk on his life and undertake such tasks? Well, I think there is a logic of sacrifice that creates a chain of obligations. So from 1970, there was the first judge murdered in the post-war period, Pietro Scaglione. Then another judge, Cesare Terranova. Then another judge, Rocco Chinnici. So Falcone saw himself as part of this lineage in which there was a duty to make their sacrifice count.
How come then, Misha, given the circumstances of the Maxi trial, and you've said that it began to turn the tide, how come Falcone's reputation seemed to have suffered as a result of the trial?
Essentially, this was the beginning of a very uphill struggle, and a lot of people's vested interests were affected by the Maxi trial, by the implications of what was going on in Palermo. And so there was a sort of backlash.
A fight back, yeah.
A fight back, exactly, from interests both amongst the mafia, but also people in Rome whose interests were being damaged by this. So there was this period in the late 80s and very early 90s where basically Falcone was seen as a fanatic, damaging the interests of Sicily and Italy. But I don't think that that was the whole story. I think they were still very frightened by him, the mafia, and that he had given them a very bloody nose.
I really think that what caused Falcone an awful lot of problems was the fight within the judiciary, which was not connected with any collusion. It was just a different view of how the law should be administered. Mm. For instance, when it came to promotion and Falcone was in to replace the head of the anti-mafia pool, the judiciary split and some people were prepared to go and promote merit. But many other people, right, left and center, were in favor of continuing to promote seniority, not to dismantle the gerontocracy of the judiciary.
And then he's moved to Rome and agrees to be moved to Rome. Why, and was that a good thing?
He's called back from Palermo. I think that essentially he's seen by now by many people as a troublemaker and that they need to quieten down the whole Falcone phenomenon. Personally, I don't think that he saw this as a huge defeat himself, because I think by then he was probably quite exhausted. Although, politically, I think that he did sense it as a defeat.
But, well, I don't think so. I mean, in terms of institutional design, these are the 2 years in which he achieved his maximum success. He was able to reconstruct the investigative and judicial structure, investigating organized crime in Italy as we have it today.
How is he being seen by the Italian people at this fairly late stage in his career, in the popular imagination in Italy?
Well, in my opinion, I think that he is seen as a great hero. It's very difficult for Italians who have a very cynical view of what goes on in their country. It's very difficult for them to really grasp on to a real hero. But I think what was happening in Sicily now demonstrated that the mafia did not have huge social popular support in the territory. You were beginning to see the seeds of something which grew into a really big popular movement. In Sicily itself, you had a mayor of Palermo, Leoluca Orlando, who was working specifically on an anti-mafia campaign. The church in Sicily, for the first time, came out against the mafia. This was absolutely huge. I mean, this was groundbreaking. And as soon as things like that started to happen, ordinary people felt able for the first time in Sicily to express their disgust at what the mafia were doing ostensibly in their name. So I think that Falcone was beginning to generate a huge popularity for the first time. And I think that Italians continue to express their disgust at organized crime to this day when given the opportunity.
We started talking about his assassination and we've gone full circle when on May the 23rd, 1992, he was blown up in his motorcade from the airport to Palermo. Here's a clip of the priest announcing the names of the dead, followed by the widow of one of the slain bodyguards, Vito Schifani.
Delle anime dei nostri fratelli e sorella Giovanni Falcone, Francesca Morvillo, Antonio Montinaro, Rocco Di Cillo e Vito Schifani, morti.
Rivolgendomi agli uomini della mafia, perché ci sono qua dentro.
I address the men of the mafia.
E non.
For I know they are present here.
Certamente non cristiani. Sappiate.
I know they are not Christians, but even for you, forgiveness exists.
C'è possibilità di perdono. Io vi perdono, però mi dovete mettere in ginocchio.
I forgive you, but you must go down on your knees and have the courage to change.
Loro non cambiano. Di cambiare.
But they never change. They never change.
Wow. Must have been an incredible moment.
Hair standing on... I mean, you know, I feel completely shaken up listening to that now. And for the people of Sicily, it must have been just shattering.
Fortunately, he saw something important before he died, because on 30 January 1992, the Court of Cassation, which is the third level of justice in Italy, confirmed most of the maxi trial sentences. And he thought that was really the big success, because the idea that you could put people in jail because they were members of this threatening organization had been inscribed in law for the first time. That's what he said.
Prime Minister Amato said, "The state is not entirely innocent, and we know it. What portion of the government has engaged in collusion, has allowed certain things to happen, has failed to intervene when it might have acted? These are questions about our recent history that need to be answered."
We may gain some satisfaction to know that the assassins were caught, tried and sentenced, and the sentence was confirmed in 2006. So what, as somebody said, what the judges didn't achieve in life in full, they achieved in death, in the sense of really making the state respond in a forceful and cohesive manner, which had never existed before. That's what happened after their death.
I think it's very important to say loudly, Giovanni Falcone did not die in vain.
Is there a sense in which Falcone really was a martyr, because he knew where it was leading, and yet he wouldn't be diverted from the course?
Yet he persisted for the greater good of Sicilian society, of Italian society, and in my opinion, of European society as well. He has not fully succeeded in his work because Italy is still riddled with organized crime, but he has shown all of us that it is possible to do something about it.
My thanks to Misha Glenny, who chose as his great life Giovanni Falcone, and to our expert witness, Diego Gambetta. Goodbye.